This is Greg Olson, here to tell you about my new podcast, TE1. On the show, I had a chance to talk to my fellow tight ends who have revolutionized the position from an extra lineman to a dual threat superstar. And just like my guests have changed the game, this year, NFLSundayTicket.tv is revolutionizing your NFL viewing experience. Stream all the live out-of-market NFL games every Sunday on your favorite devices and never miss a moment from your favorite players. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use the promo code GREG88 at checkout and get 15% off your subscription. That's NFLSundayTicket.tv and the promo code GREG88. Subscribe to TE1 and get NFLSundayTicket.tv, an unmatched dual threat.
Blue Wire.
Welcome back. This is the Big Blue Banter, New York Giants football podcast. I'm Dan Schneier, joined as always by Nick Palato. And today we got a little special show for you. We're going to take a little break from the breakdowns of training camp, even though, again, I hope you enjoyed our podcast from earlier this week when we broke down the first padded practice. We expect to do a lot more of those. It's getting exciting. It's almost time. We're almost there. We're getting very, very close, even though we won't have the preseason to evaluate this team. But today we're going to take a little break from that because we got a special guest on the show, and he's a former NFL scout, currently writing for the Detroit Lions for Sports Illustrated. Really exciting guy. Sent me over his work before we got on here, and I was just reading through this stuff, and I was just flabbergasted at how detail-oriented he was. His evaluations of the Giants and of some big free agent signings that the Giants made that will be a big part of this roster in 2020 and beyond. So without further ado, I wanted to welcome to the show Daniel Kelly. Tell us a little bit about your background, Daniel, and scouting, kind of where you're at right now.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Dan and Nick, for having me on your show. It's been an amazing journey that to try to unpack. I grew up in Minnesota, fanatical fan of the Washington Redskins football team, and grew to love the team. And I really wanted to get into football somehow, and I wasn't quite sure how. I never got big enough really to play. My parents let me play my junior season in high school, and I was so bad at it that I actually was the only kid on my team not to earn a letter jacket. So it was I played mostly left bench, but I kind of dabbled a little bit in the coaching side of it. I made and designed a play that set up to Joe Gibbs, the head coach of the Redskins. That play actually worked for a touchdown against the Atlanta Falcons in the preseason game in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. He sent me a letter that's in my book, Whatever It Takes, from Coach Gibbs. But I kind of dabbled in the coaching. But for my 17th birthday, my parents gave me a book called Secret of an NFL Scout, written by Tony Brentano. And I couldn't put it down. I said, this is it. I want to be an NFL scout. And I knew from that moment that that's what I was going to be and that's what I wanted to be. And so I started, just like taping a bunch of games off TV, writing reports, and sent them off to then Redskins general manager Charlie Castle, who responded his letters from my book to Whatever It Takes, saying, hey, you're still too young. Check back after your first year, second year of college. Well, I barely passed through high school. I was so focused on football, and I failed off a small community college. Found myself at 21 years old working in Allstate Insurance as an insurance agent. There was like a sports radio show on that said, hey, first 32 callers called in. You can come in the Minnesota Vikings mock draft, bring a friend. And so I had an open phone line. So I started dialing like a crazy man. And I got through and they said, hey, congratulations. You go represent the Jacksonville Jaguars in our mock draft on the radio. Bring a friend. And so I did. And I walked into the Vikings facility in Eden Prairie, Minnesota at the time. And that's back when they were there. And, I walked up to the microphone, scared to death. And, just like the NFL commissioner, they said, and with the second pick in the 1995 draft, the Jacksonville Jaguars select. And I leaned at the microphone and said, Tony Boselli, offensive tackle, USC. The corner of my eye, I saw Tony Dungy, then the defensive coordinator of the Minnesota Vikings, sitting in the corner all by himself. So I approached him. I went for it, I guess you could say. And I walked up to him and said, hey, Coach Dungy, would you be willing to take a look at some of my reports? He says, hey, after a few minutes of reviewing me, he said, this stuff is pretty good. He said, how would you feel about coming to my office next week? We sit down and talk. So I did. And that turned into be a 6-month unpaid internship with Tony Dungy when he was working under Denny Green with the Minnesota Vikings. And then he left for Tampa Bay as a head coach. And I went back into the real world, selling Kirby vacuum cleaners and bouncing around with different jobs until I was 24 and found myself working at Bank of America Mortgage as a loan officer. And I had just one of these moments, guys, where and I'm not sure, maybe some of our listeners can identify with this too, but I was sitting in this real estate meeting and it was kind of going through the motions and like, what am I doing here? You know, that kind of a moment. And I said, you know, my dream is to be an NFL scout, and it's better to go for it and not get it than wonder what I always, you know, could have been, you know, was my thought process. And so I started. I stopped at Target that night, bought some pens and paper. It's called DirecTV, subscribed to their college football package. I had a little bit of those little satellite dishes, and I started recording games. And that turned into be a 7-month project that resulted in me self-publishing a 350-page 1998 NFL draft report. Paid every dollar I had to my name. It was $2,300, which was every dime. I don't think I ever paid rent that month. My landlord, and they put it off for a month. And I personalized every book as my resume, quote-unquote resume, to every head coach, general manager, and director of player personnel in the NFL. No guarantees. Got a $1,300 credit account on top of it with Airborne Express at the time. And I sent these out personalized. It was about 8 to 10 pounds per box with my book in there and my information. And I sent it out to all 32 teams in the NFL. You know, again, no guarantees. Sat back and waited to see who would respond. The first team that called was the New Orleans Saints. Mike Ditka really liked my book at the time. That fell through, and then the call came from the New York Jets, and that's how I ended up in pro scouting with the Jets for 4 seasons.
It's awesome, Daniel. I think there's a lot in your story that a lot of us can relate to, myself included. I mean, first of all, I myself was a member of the left bench when it came to football. Early on in my career, I wanted to be a quarterback. I thought of myself as a quarterback, even to the extent of changing my AIM username when I was back in elementary and middle school to QB Dan 7. That never worked out, even after changing the screen name to QB Dan 77 after losing the password for the original one. But more importantly, actually, I had the moment of clarity when I was working my first job out of college, and I had pursued a career at first in advertising and media, that side of journalism. I went to journalism school, but I went for that side because I was always told, don't pursue your dream to be a sports writer. There's no money in it. It's a dying industry. What are you, crazy? And I had that moment when I was commuting on one grueling day to New York City, and the bus was backed up, and it was an hour and 45 minutes to the city. And I was like, I can't stand to do another day of this. And I started writing a blog, reached out to Chris Wessling, who at the time was with Roto-World, told him I'd work the Twitter account there for free. And, you know, one thing leads to another, and you find yourself in these places with these opportunities, and you just work your butt off and try to build on them. And I think that's pretty much exactly what you did. You found your little niche, you found your opportunities, albeit big or small, and you worked your butt off, and you got some, and you got places because of that. So I think all of that is really awesome, and I'm really glad that you've had these experiences. And obviously, I think there's going to be more for you in the future. And until then, though, we're glad we can get you on because we can talk a little Giants football with you, because we know, based on what you sent me, this comprehensive scouting report of the Giants from the 2019 season, based on the work that you prepared for. And I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say this. Am I allowed to say this?
Absolutely.
Okay. Based on the work that you prepared for Bruce Allen for of the Washington Redskins, kind of preparing him for what he might see when the Redskins took on the Giants. I believe this was for the second game of the season after they met first time earlier in the season. And this is just unbelievably comprehensive report. And then you also shared with us your scouting report to some of the Giants' big free agent signings. So let's first start with the Giants team. And one thing that stood out to me first was was one of the points you made early on, which was that you felt that this team really was lacking a number one wide receiver on the field. And that was last season. Obviously, this offseason, they didn't do much in the way of adding a big number one wide receiver. They're moving offenses. We expect a Coryell-based attack with Jason Garrett, which means more vertical, more of a vertical passing game. You also noted within your report that the Giants really were a very conservative offensive attack from the passing game, a lot of short intermediate stuff. So my question for you is, based on what they did in the offseason, based on what you see on this roster, can they move the ball consistently in the passing game in a vertical-based offense, as we expect them to move to, with what they have at the wide receiver
position? Absolutely. Great question. Great story, too, Dan. I appreciate listening to your story. And, you know, I'm a big Daniel Jones fan. To me, he looked – the big thing that stuck out to me was that he looked like a veteran as a rookie. That is a great sign. For an offense, for having a young quarterback like that. So I'm a big fan of his. I do think they have some talent. They're not great at receiver, but they're good. I developed a color-coded grading system. I gave Slayton, Tate, and also Sterling Shepard, I gave them good grades. So I think they have the ability with Jason Garrett coming in. I think he understands the offense very well. You mentioned more of a Coryell attack. I think that when you have Barkley in the backfield, it always opens up the option of play action a lot more. So I think there's going to be some opportunity there for them to move the ball downfield from everything that, that the moves they made during the offseason combined with the talent on the roster. I just don't think the last regime really got, it's kind of like a grapefruit. I don't think they squeezed them as much as they could as far as the talent is concerned, because when I look at the Giants offense, most of my guys are graded for the Giants starting offense last year as either good or blue chip guys. There's a couple blue chippers in there with Will Hernandez and Barkley. So I think they definitely can move the ball downfield. I think Jason Garrett's going to probably be a little bit more aggressive in that area, and I think we're going to see a little bit different outcome this year as far as the Giants offense is concerned.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that. I think that when you look at this team, if there is reason for optimism, it's going to be the steps forward that this offense makes. In my mind, in Nick's mind, they're still a little bit ways away on defense, especially after losing really two of their projected starting outside corners. I mean, DeAndre Baker was a lock to be their number one or their number two, obviously, after Bradbury. And you even mentioned it in your report, which I want to get to in a little bit later. But you said he really came on at the end of the season. You charted it, and you also broke it down. But that was something me and Nick saw that a lot of Giants fans disagreed with. A lot of the media didn't really cut on board with. But DeAndre Baker showed serious signs of strides down the stretch. Now, obviously, that's out the window. Sam Beal opted out. So we think that if this team is going to make that step forward, it will happen on the offensive side of the ball. And I did notice that you really didn't have many average or below average grades there on the offensive side of the ball. So one thing that I wanted to ask you with regards to the offensive side of the ball is this. We, from Nick and I's evaluation, we thought that Will Hernandez would be a better fit in an offensive system like the one we project in 2020, where they're using more power and gap from their run blocking scheme. You already feel like he's already accomplished as a blue chip player. We're a little bit more on we see the promise, but we want more consistency there. Do you feel that this transition is going to he'll kind of stand out as one of the best players in this offensive transition?
Yeah, absolutely, Dan, Nick. I think he will definitely stand out. I mean, he is in my mind, he's everything you want in an offensive lineman at that position, at the left guard position. He's somebody that just really, really played well. I thought he played well coming out of college even. And I think that he'll continue. I mean, kind of, like I talked about, he's a big, stocky, thick, heavy, massive wide blocker with brute strength, aggressiveness, above average athletic ability. So when you have that going for you, you can move laterally, you can get out a little bit. You have that brute power. I think he'll definitely fit into that new philosophy they're running on offense. I think he'll really excel in the system.
Dan and I both believe Will Hernandez can definitely reach that blue chip potential. It's just last year being surrounded by John Jalapio and Nate Solder kind of was a hindrance to him. I did a piece on Big Blue View for that. Did you pick up on those same kind of things? Like every time that Hernandez looked like he made a mistake, it was actually because Solder and Jalapio just kind of were not on the same page. And it just seemed like the offensive line itself never was cohesive, despite the fact that they didn't really have a lot of injuries throughout the year. Did you see that as well?
Absolutely. From like a coaching standpoint, Nick, they just seem kind of be out of sync, you mean?
Yes. Yeah. From coaching and communication standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely, Nick. I completely agree. So I think there was definitely just a lot of breakdowns in communication with the previous coaching regime there and with the staff, some lack of continuity with Manning and Jones kind of talking at times back and forth, with the injuries and stuff. And so, yeah, I definitely thought there was some communication problems there and it made him maybe, look a little bit worse at times. So I definitely agree with you there.
Yeah, and I want to flip it to the defensive side of the ball for a second, Daniel, and ask you a couple questions there. But first, I did want to say this before I bury the lead. I thought you brought up an interesting point about Daniel Jones that isn't often discussed and is very often overlooked. The fact that he really did look and feel like a veteran as a rookie. And I think that type of thing gets overlooked a bit, when you get bogged down by some of these advanced numbers and just, the total turnovers, things like that. it kind of loses the fact that this guy came right in week three with very limited practice time and led the offense and really did have a feel of a guy who can make big plays in big moments and who could drive the ball down the field also at times with anticipation, with touch. So I think it will be interesting to see if our evaluation, our three evaluation of this offense ends up bearing fruit this early, because obviously there are going to be changes. They are going to have a new left tackle, a new right tackle, potentially a new center as well. So we'll see what happens there. But I want to flip it to the defensive side of the ball for a second. I want to ask you about something you said. You said last season, and I quote, Marcus Golden is the best and most consistent force on the defense. He's a very opportunistic player, rushing the passer and in runs. He's a player who's grew on me more and more the more I watched him, and he has enough production while Green to take him very seriously off the edge. So you're very high on Marcus Golden. We feel like this was a very sad move by Dave Gettleman to bring him back, get him in the mix. Can you break down a little bit of your evaluation on Golden and what kind of player you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I liked him, like you said, Dan. He is somebody that really grew on me the more I did watch him. He seemed to be someone who was very opportunistic, and that was something that's very key to me, because you want guys to make big plays and big moments and seize the moment. And to me, it seemed like he can create some breaks, like I said, a report on his own. I felt he really excelled at finding a way to get to the quarterback, or at least create some kind of a pressure, flash the ability to bull rush a little bit. A little bit tight, a little bit rigid, so he's not going to be a guy that's going to be explosive at the point of attack, but a guy that, he'll keep going. And he was a constant source of pressure, as far as, he kept bringing it, he kept trying. He definitely wanted it. And I think that's a big thing you want to look for, because so many of these guys in the NFL in these different uniforms and different helmets, the want is not always there. Want is a very big thing. It's a very big key characteristic that I look for. And I just think, like I said, the more I watched him, the more I kind of warmed up to him. I thought, like I said, he was the best player in the Giants defense, and he's a guy that you can win with. That's the key. I really like him.
From tight muscles, tough workouts, signs of aging, to simply making it through each busy day, everyone understands what it feels like to be tense and sore. So everyone can benefit from TheraOne's CBD products. Started by Dr. Jason Wersland, TheraBody exists to provide you with the best scientifically validated natural solutions to help soothe your body and relax your mind. It started with the revolutionary TheraGun percussive therapy device when Dr. Jason saw the benefits of using CBD in his treatments. He created TheraOne to bring you CBD products done right. A lot of CBD products claim organic, but still contain up to 30% filler, and these fillers are potentially toxic, by the way. TheraOne tests their products 4 times before they get to you. Every product is USDA certified organic, grown in the US, and their CBD extracts are the highest quality available anywhere. Use TheraOne's warming lotion in your morning routine, the cooling lotion or massage oil to recover, body balm for targeted relief, and sleep aid. And now, through Labor Day, Monday, September 7th, TheraOne is offering our listeners a buy one, get one free for all TheraOne products. But you've got to go to theragun.com/bluewire, all one word. If you don't love what you get from TheraOne, send it back for a full refund within 30 days of purchase. This is not something TheraOne is likely to do again. Buy one, get one free at theragun.com/bluewire. But only until Labor Day, go right now to theragun.com/bluewire. Sundays are coming back in the NFL. With NFL Sunday Ticket.tv, you can stream every live out-of-market NFL game every Sunday afternoon on your favorite devices, plus Red Zone and DirecTV Fantasy Zone channels. Never miss your favorite teams and favorite players. No matter where you live, NFL Sunday Ticket.tv is your key to the most glorious Sundays ever. Use the promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, at checkout to get 15% off your subscription. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use promo code BLUEWIRE.
Other guy that you could possibly win with on the defense, somebody that I've been toting up, and I know you also think he's a good player, is Leonard Williams. Do you think he could possibly unlock his 2016 stats, bring those kind of back, getting 6 to 8 sacks, possibly providing interior pressure and actually finishing the play? Do you think that's a part of his arsenal this year heading into Patrick Graham's defense?
It's possible. It's very possible. He still has a lot of that ability in him. I think he just kind of got bogged down by things that were happening at his last team. He's definitely, he can be a handful, and, Nick, at times, like I said in my report, he's someone that, have showed a good effort and motor. He keeps coming. He definitely, he understands the game as a veteran. He understands what to do and how to create pressure and stuff. So, I thought it was a huge mistake, of his past team to let him, let him get away. I think he's somebody that can really turn it up and quite possibly get back to that form. Usually when a guy hasn't had that form for a few years, it can be a little bit tougher. But I think that they put him in the right situations. And, I think it's very possible he definitely still has. I gave him a green grade, which is good in my report. He's definitely somebody that you can win with, someone you can depend on, and he's a veteran, he's a solid veteran. I think we're going to see a pretty good season out of him if I had to guess.
I like how you said that he has an old school feel to him. It's something that I kind of can see too. But man, I just love his size and the energy that he can bring from the interior. What about Dalvin Tomlinson? Both of these players are heading into a contract year. Do you think it's capable that maybe the Giants could possibly retain both these players? And do you see the upside that Dalvin Tomlinson brings like I do? And I've been preaching for a couple of years now because I'm in love with that player.
Well, what have you seen in him so far? Just out of curiosity, I'm interested.
I see a player who's really disruptive against the run. It really kind of demands double teams. It's very hard for guards to kind of scoop block him or get in front of him and just kind of isolate block them one-on-one. I feel like he kind of commands double teams, and he actually has, for a guy of his size, a solid first step against the pass. I mean, he's not as equipped for that because he is a bigger guy, but just he's dominant facing the run. That's what I've seen.
Yeah, absolutely, Nick. I agree with you. I really liked him a lot. I do think it's possible they could retain both of them. I think it's important they try to retain both of them because they're both guys that can play at a high level and you can win with them. I like Tomlinson a lot. I thought he was pretty active. He was a gap shooter, showed good strength, playing speed, and had some good size to him. He's a guy that, has some big play capability, 7 tackles for a loss. And anytime you start seeing guys have a lot of tackles or tackles for a loss, that's a good sign. I felt like he was just a little bit under the dominant threshold. He's not a dominant guy all the time, but he's, like I said, sure good enough to win with. And, he's a guy that I like, just like you're saying, Nick. And I think, both those guys together would be real solid for some time to come.
Something I found really interesting about your report, Daniel, because it's something that obviously Nick and I have discussed countless times in this podcast, is that you believed, based on your report, that the inside linebacker play with Ogletree and Mayo was below average against the run. And that's how me and Nick felt. And we felt like, and this will lead into some of your evaluations that we have, that we want to dive into about the big free agent signings, but we felt like although the Blake Martinez signing by the Giants in free agency was not exactly so well received by the fan base, because there are some clips of him, in coverage where, people are like, what's going on here? Is he a complete linebacker? Why are they signing him? What he does do really well, and you can touch on this more because you wrote it up in your report, is fill in the run game. And it's taken for granted by so many fans just how important it is to have inside backers who are not below average against the run like the Giants had last season, because the Giants, even albeit with a very dominant, not dominant, but very close to dominant defensive line in that second half of the season, once Leonard Williams got in there, that interior defensive line, they were still below average against the run a lot of the time. Against the Cowboys, it stood out, and a few other teams. And a lot of the reason, in our opinion, the inside line. Can you tell us a little bit about how Blake Martinez kind of mimicked?
Absolutely, Dan. Blake Martinez is a guy that I watched, with the Packers last year. I did a full team report on them as well in my addition for the Redskins, and I really liked him. He reminded me, if you remember, the Derek Smith, the old Redskins 49er linebacker years ago. He's a guy that to me, I think at the time he led the league with tackles at 118. He was, as I said in my report, he was an absolute tackling machine. He was active and productive against the run. He wasn't overpowering, but he's athletic enough and has enough playing strength to consistently kind of get in there clean, fill the holes, good instincts, can read and diagnose inside. That's a big part of playing inside, is be able to, you know, read and be able to shed blocks or kind of read and see what's going on, and instincts to get to the right. Because a lot of these linebackers, a lot of times, some of them, I should say, you know, they don't have the instincts for it. They're on the wrong lane, or they're a little bit out of the way or something. Well, that's not the case with Martinez. I think Martinez was a very good signing. In fact, I recommended him to Bruce Allen to bring in, had he stayed there with the Redskins. He's a guy that I liked as a free agent quite a bit. And he's a guy that, you know, he could also stay pretty close on coverages if you want to drop him in the coverage, much like Derek Smith used to do, the old linebacker I alluded to. He showed good range. He can get the sideline, and he can cover running back screens. And he's a solid tackler. You know, that's not always a given these days either. A lot of guys are hitters, and this guy's a solid tackler. So I think he brings a presence. He comes from a pretty, pretty big program in Green Bay. He's a solid traditional type of linebacker. He's not a blow-up linebacker. It's going to blow people up physically. But he's a guy that's, you know, pretty athletic and understands the position, understands how to tackle people and wraps. And he's a huge upgrade to me. He brings just a totally different game inside for the Giants, I think, than we've seen last year, for sure, to your point.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there, Daniel. I want to ask you about another player, a versatile player, Julian Love. Now, he played boundary corner out there at Notre Dame, and last year he was in a more of a safety role. But you noted in your scouting report how effective he was in the box. And it's something that Dan and I have gone back and forth on. But given the dearth of talent at outside corner right now, do you think it's possible that he could maybe transition back with a new coaching staff and possibly play a little boundary corner despite not doing it in the NFL yet?
Yeah, it's very possible. I like Julian Love. I like him. I think he's somebody that, you know, he will come down to the box he'll stick his nose in there as well. He's a solid tackler. He's got some playmaking ability to him. So I think it's very possible that he could do that. He's a good little football player. You have 5'11", 195. He can turn on the speed a little bit. He can cover. He can make up some ground. I think he showed a little bit of a playmaker. I thought he was a promising player. So I think it is very possible. You get a guy that's talented like that, that you can win with, that's an above average player. If he's well coached, I think it's very possible, Nick, that he could possibly do that and have success doing it.
Tell me a little bit, Daniel, about your opinion or your, from your analysis, your report on James Bradbury, because I think at this point, given what's gone on at the boundary cornerback position for the Giants, they're counting on a lot from Bradbury. They're going to count on him to play man coverage early and often, a lot in these 1x3 sets where he's alone on the boundary. In your opinion, is this a number one cornerback who can hold up in a man and heavy defense that's going to be blitz heavy as well? It's going to put him alone a lot on an island.
I do. I liked him. I liked him a lot, Dan. I thought, with Carolina, just kind of looking at my report on him for a second, he showed pretty good playing speed, technique, agility, ball skills. Those are all required. I think he can be a top corner for the Giants. He showed pretty good ability to pedal and be able to, flip his hips, turn and run. He showed some physicality as well, battle some of the receivers off the release. He looked like a guy that can hold his own, so he could provide some tight coverage on pure straight line, deeper vertical routes. He could match routes. He didn't get blown away by anybody that I saw. On underneath routes, he showed ability to stay reasonably close, I put, at the break point, which is critically important, because when you get a guy that has, the hips are a big part of that cornerback position. So when you get a guy that has some fluidity to his hips, it can turn and he can change direction, that's vitally important. You get some of these corners out there that, they're a little bit tight and rigid in the hips. They can't change as quick as direction. You get these receivers with these quick tendon ends and these quick, tendon outs and these routes, and he's a guy that can match some of those routes because he's got good hips, which is something that's very valuable at the cornerback position. He showed the ability to defend passes. He had some play picking ability to him, I thought. And the only thing that was he had an average looking close back if he got beat a little bit. He didn't look, you know, he lacked a short area burst, but he also could do some things. He can sack the quarterback off the edge. And he was also willing to play some months of more. So I think he's an overall well-rounded corner. And I think the Giants fans should be excited about this guy because I think he's going to be able to hold his own at that position.
Well, Daniel, that's really exciting to hear. Now, I want to transition a little bit back to the offensive line, a really interesting player who just got a little bit of an extension, and that's Nick Gates. Now, I saw you noted something that I picked up in my film analysis as well, is that he finds himself on the ground. Now, I think that a little bit too much, and I think I saw that a little bit more often when he was playing inside the interior of offensive line like he did against the Miami Dolphins. I have talked about on this podcast how he struggled against somebody of Christian Wilkins' ilk because of the strength of the point of attack that Wilkins possesses. So there's a lot of talk around Gates and possibly transitioning to the center position. Do you think that's possible if he does add a little bit of strength? It seems like he's a really talented player. Seems like he has really good footwork. Do you think that's something that's in his arsenal?
I think it's very possible. I mean, he's, again, a good football player overall. I think that, you know, he's got really good size at 6'6", 318. I think that, he would be a big body guy inside that can, you know, add some physicality to that position. He can anchor down when he's challenged, uses his hands to battle and holds up well at the point. Good use of hands. You know, anytime you've got a good use of hands, that's a great sign at that position. I just felt like he had a solid anchor when he was challenged with bull rushes. That's equally important because obviously when big guys, you know, just try to bull up and bull rush, so he can kind of hold down the anchor at that position possibly if he does that. But he has some aggressiveness to his game. Like to your point, Nick, he did end up with the ground a little too much. I think that he's more of a mauler in that sense. I put in my report, but he had a couple of play blocks too. So I think he's a guy that definitely I would like to see him. I mean, if I was running a team, I would plug him in there during camp. I would like to see him actually get a shot at that position because, you know, I think he's got the ability, and I would be very interested to see how if he's productive or not in that position. That's an interesting point. That's a very interesting point.
Yeah, it should be interesting. Nearly 6'5", and as Mark Colombo described him, Giants offensive line coach, has that alpha male mindset when he steps in the huddle. So it'll be interesting. Daniel, thank you so much for joining us on tonight's episode of the Big Blue Banter podcast. We really enjoyed this conversation, and we're looking forward to seeing more of your work in the future. Before we let you go, why don't you tell the listeners tonight where they can find your work, and if you're on Twitter and active there, please tell them where they can find you there.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Dan, Nick, for the opportunity to be on the show. It's been a lot of fun for me tonight. A real privilege to be on the show with you, so thank you. I'm on Twitter, at Daniel Kelly Book. I'm online writing again for Sports Illustrated, Detroit Lions. I do some writing as well for Riggo's Rag, as well as Touchdown Europe. I've written my book, Whatever It Takes, whateverittakesbook.com. It's available anywhere books are sold online. So if you type in Daniel Kelly, New York Jets, Daniel Kelly, NFL, you'll see a few pages come up, a lot of different things I've had the opportunity and privilege to contribute through the years. And I'm just about everywhere. Six different countries in the last month, so on a different podcast. And so, yeah, it's been very cool to talk football for sure. And thank you again, guys, for the opportunity to be on your show.
It sounds great, Daniel. Hey, thanks so much for the insight on the team that we all love so much, the New York Giants.
Sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. Major League Baseball back in action, and there's no better place to start wagering than our exclusive partners, BetOnline. Check all the odds, futures, and props to bet on, all available 24/7. And with the return of sports, BetOnline sat down with former pro players Eddie George, Harold Reynolds, and seven-time NBA champion Robert Horry. See what they had to say on what it will be like playing without fans in a series they're calling Pandemic. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. Remember to use promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts.